tricks. But the hate is still a troll. I love how much troll. I love how much troll.
This is the Habershow Pod relaunch, first episode in months. The last time I had this show on, it was Amin El Hassan. And so I thought it kind of has to happen that I bring him back for the relaunch. I'm sorry.
I should be apologizing to you. I canceled your show basically by coming on. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to win back, you know, the masses.
And that giggle you hear is Ethan Strauss from The Athletic. Yeah, this is the OG group. Back at ESPN a few years back, we had a Friday show. True Hoop TV Live on Fridays, was it? Fridays?
I just liked Amin's truncated imitation of Henry Abbott whenever he would say True Hoop TV. That's what I was into.
True Hoop TV! True Hoop TV!
See, that's the good stuff right there.
And we had a chat in there. It was ahead of its time. I feel like I'm not so sure we do enough of that anymore. And I felt like the best chemistry, things were going well. And I feel like in order to relaunch the Habershow Pod, I had to get you guys back. And I want to thank you for being a part of this. It's been a rough couple months, not just the pandemic, but, I guess the word is laid off. Mm. Or maybe that's two words, but
well, would you rather be fired or laid off? It's a good question.
Which one do you get to keep your money?
You were divulging this personal detail, this highly personal detail. I interrupted you with my question and I said it was a good question.
You called your own question good?
I did. I did the Doc Rivers on myself. It's a good question, Ethan.
It's a good, handsome question.
Yeah, so I'm no longer at NBC Sports. I'm closing that chapter of my career. And Players Tribune, KD style, new chapter, really excited about. Can't really divulge the details yet. But one of those things that I'm excited about is relaunching the Habershow Pod. NBC was really great. I had a wonderful 2 years there. But the time has come to an end over at the Peacock. And I am moving on into this new space. And they were very friendly and nice on my way out and said, hey, you can have the Habershow. All the dozens of listeners that were on the Habershow, you can have that. And so I am excited. I think really what it came down to was they saw Amin El Hassan on the show and they said, we don't want any more of this.
Yeah, you can't recycle the joke that I used at the beginning of the podcast.
I mean,
it hasn't even been that long for you to go back to that.
I just want to interrupt because I feel like whenever you're talking about getting laid off or whatever, there's some built in, even if you're fine, it doesn't sound convincing. I've been through that where it was fine, but it just, the more you explain it, like, it's good. No, it's actually a good thing. It's a good, it just doesn't sound convincing. I'm aware of what Tom's working on. I cannot divulge it. I can assure you that it is incredibly exciting and I look forward to it and it's going to be awesome. So I am co-signing that and I'm excited about it.
Reminder. Just a reminder, Ethan got laid off with like 18 months left on his deal. So he basically got paid every day to write a book. He got book that ESPN didn't see a dime of.
Well, because, I didn't, you know, I actually, like a fool, I wrote my book, unfortunately, like during, like on the Athletic's time, because it wasn't supposed to be a Warriors book. Let's face it, I got paid to possibly, maybe allegedly vape and hike in the East Bay Hills. That's probably what I got paid to do. Maybe. But it was, it was a pretty optimal experience, I have to say. It was not bad.
So in your case, it was, you were being genuinely happy about getting laid off. It's talking myself into this.
I was more than happy. I mean, this is your podcast, but I was relieved the day after I got fired. Just completely relieved. The day it happened wasn't good. It felt like the walls were caving in and we all experienced that to a certain degree together. And it was just more than me who was going through it. But the next day was such a wave of relief because I was unhappy at my job at that point. I was burnt out. on not just being a beat writer, which is an exhausting job and some people are better oriented to it than others, but also at ESPN, the responsibilities can pile up depending on what you do. And it can feel a little bit like the Hi, My Name is Joe song that they have for little kids, where you have the button and then you're spinning the plate and then they just keep adding things. And I felt like I hated it, but I never admitted to myself that I hated it, because it was just like looking a gift horse in the mouth or being a prima donna, because so many people wanted that job. In fact, there was an article at the internal ESPN publication that I think Mark Stein was also quoted in, about how this was the greatest job in all of sports, to cover the Golden State Warriors. And one day I was at practice with Marcus Thompson and Michael Lewis shows up, and Michael Lewis gives a talk to the Warriors, and then he walks up to us and he goes, "Well, you guys just have the best job in the world, don't you?" I was just thinking, I don't know. I feel like, A, I feel miserable, and B, I kind of rather be Michael Lewis. Like, maybe rather be Michael Lewis. It seems like a pretty cool job if one has the incredible talent he has to have it. But there was this outside perception that this, you have lucked into something incredible, which I did. And so it created a dynamic where, despite the misery, I couldn't even admit to myself that I hated it until the burden was taken off me. And the next day was, oh my God, this is a relief. This is a relief to get off this roller coaster.
I mean, did you, when you left the Suns, was that part of a layoff or was that just, I need a new job?
I need a new job. It's when you work somewhere and you hate the people you work for and they hate you back. Like that's and you know, like, it's funny because I went through the stages of I can fix this to I can outlast this to just fuck it, let me get out of here. All in the span of 2 years. Like it was so, you know, and I imagine Ethan, you felt the same thing, but like, just to know you went from, man, we do this better than anybody out there, to what the fuck is happening. And that's a tough transition to go through. But like Ethan said, sometimes all you can see, all you can envision, is what you're doing in the moment. It's hard sometimes to take that leap because there is a safety in the familiar. And sometimes
the inertia, you know, of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's not just the inertia. It's just, this is the devil you know, right? We're told the devil you know over the devil you don't. Sometimes the devil you don't is pretty fucking good. And luckily for me, the devil I didn't know ended up being really good for me and my career. So you never know. You never know until you take that leap.
It's funny to me because I remember people trying to troll you online and say like, oh, you know, you can't get back in the NBA and whatnot to Amin. And just the absurdity of it, because everybody knows that basketball ops guys are generally miserable. It is a tough way to make a living. There are a lot of different reasons for it. I think you could speak to a lot of the great things too, and there's camaraderie and it's different from your standard office job. But I don't meet many happy NBA ops guys, and the vast majority of them do not get paid as well as prominent media people.
They don't get paid as well as people with regular white collar jobs. Like that's the thing that a lot of people don't get. It's like, you are making peanuts. I remember I got a raise to get up to 50K and I thought I was king of the world. Like, I was just like, you can't tell me nothing. I'm making $50,000. Right. I got a raise to that. Right. And playoff bonuses help. But guess what happens when you get people who don't know what they're doing? The playoff bonuses go away. So things that you're counting on, to kind of supplement your income, stop. And there's no other way. Even if they would let you have another part-time job bartending or something like that, you just don't have enough hours to get it done. So literally, this is the only thing you can do. And that's tough, man. It's a tough way to live. I won't say I was miserable. I was miserable when I worked for a bad organization. When I worked for a good organization, long hours and poor pay. But I won't lie, I was happy, man. Yeah. Because I felt like what I was doing was meaningful. So it all really depends on the situation you're in. Jason Jackson loves to tell this story now of a late night at American Airlines Arena. And I'm walking out
from Sirius XM NBA and the Miami Heat sideline reporter, Jason Jackson.
Yeah. me and Jax are walking out of AAA in the parking garage, and we get stopped by the Godfather. And Godfather starts telling me, like, yo, when you go come, yo, when you come sign with Death Row? And I looked at him and was like, never. I'm never doing it. And no disrespect to them. They run a great organization. I have a lot of admiration. But I know I couldn't fit into that.
Wait. Was that story just the king of all name drops? Was that Pat Riley offering you a job?
Jason Jackson?
And you spitting on it? Oh, he was offering Jason Jackson a job. I thought he was offering you a job.
No, he was offering me a job. Or at least he was asking. He was inquiring. Wait.
Pat Riley stopped you and said, Amin El Hassan, when are you going to come over to the team side again?
Yeah.
And you were like,
never.
No.
And he's not. And you know, like while I'm flexing this hard, not the first Hall of Famer to ask me that question. Not the second Hall of Famer to ask me that question.
Wow. Larry Bird. I mean,
wow. I mean, I'm trying to think. Yeah. Ethan, let's try to figure this out. Jerry West, did Jerry West offer you a job?
No. Okay. I mean, one you guys should be able to figure out fairly quickly. The other one is, I think, I don't know if it would take you a while.
We have multiple beyond Pat Riley Hall of Famers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man. I can't even imagine what Amin El Hassan is working on the team side, because I feel like you were born to have a microphone in front of your face. Like, I feel like you were born to be someone with a platform.
Well, yeah, I never thought about that. This is how much I never thought about it. The one time I thought about it was when I was watching Eastbound and Down when it first came out, and the season where he joins a very pseudo Best Damn Sports Show period as a guest for one day. And someone's talking, and he does the scissors thing. He's like, Kenny's cutting in. I remember watching that and saying, oh, that would be so cool. But damn, I'm never going to be on TV, so I'll never be able to do that. But I always thought, oh, that would be so cool if I could do that to somebody. Like, it would be so funny. I never had any intentions of doing any of this. But, you know, life has a funny way of happening. But on the team side, what I was, you know, I was very much like I am now. It's just, it's very internal. So one is tell players and they're full of shit, man. Like, it's the kind of the thing I used to do. I used to give them a hard time. And, you know, sometimes they take it seriously. Sometimes they take it jokingly, but there was that. I've talked about this on podcasts before. I was kind of quality control on ideas. So if we have an idea, I'll tell you all the reasons why the idea won't work. Not because I don't want it to work or I don't think it'll work. My job is to give you all the information you need to know what the pitfalls of this particular decision are. And then it's up to you to make that decision or not. So whether that's draft picks or free agent signings or trades, like, I was doing a lot of that and I was able to do that because Griff and Steve Kerr were two guys who welcomed feedback and did not take anything personally and understood what value I brought to the table. And the people who came afterward were the very opposite. Their feelings got hurt when I would tell them, trading for Ben Gordon is a dumb idea just because Joe Dumars says he needs to change his scenery. No shit. Joe Dumars is the guy whose his contract is around his neck, right? I would tell them these. I would tell them Goran Dragic is way better and you guys better not trade him. And the day they trade him, they left me out of the room. They literally went to a room and locked the door, traded him, and then acted like, oh, there's nothing we could do. And I'm not talking about the time he got traded to Miami. I'm talking about the time he got traded to Houston for Aaron Brooks on an expiring deal and going into a lockout, and they gave up a first-round pick to make it happen. First-round pick that became Nico Mirotic, right? I, my last act as a Phoenix Sun employee was to tell a friend of mine on the staff who had asked me to speak to the room, and I refused. I said, I'm not going to talk to those people who didn't respect my opinion on anything, but I'll tell you, was to tell them, if you draft Royce White, you are going to make a colossal mistake. Because all of the intel they had was that Royce White was an awesome guy and everything's overblown. And all the intel I had was like, not with a 10-foot pole.
I mean,
and they didn't take him. And a pick later, he goes to Houston. So, or two picks later, he goes to, you know, it was a pick later, he goes to Houston. So, for me, my job, and you know, obviously if I go back, I don't know if I'd do the same exact thing. But my job was to make people understand, if you do this, this is where the shit hits the fan. Now, you could still do it, but at least it won't be a surprise. Like, why didn't anyone tell me that Royce White was kind of a manipulative dude who used his very real ailment as a crutch to kind of guilt people? Well, you didn't listen. Somebody was saying it, but you didn't listen.
This sounds so much like the lament of the basketball ops guy, and just so much of what you hear, especially people who work for Sarver. And I was hearing similar laments at the last winter showcase, which is the last time I saw Amin, and really the last thing I went to because I didn't go to All-Star. But there's something about that job of trying to prevent the slow motion car wreck and not being listened to. And then when things go well, because of what you suggested, getting no credit, that just seems to inspire a level of angst that is not natural or normal or what you might associate with the downsides of a regular job.
To be fair, many of the things that I just described was not a Robert level decision. This was the people I worked for who came in after Stephen Griff.
Yeah.
Right. It's one thing. When I was with Stephen Griff, there were plenty of shit where we're like, you don't want to do this. And Robert's like, like, for instance, when we traded Boris Dion Rajabel for Jason Richardson and Jared Dudley, we wanted both players. Don't get me wrong. We were very high on what Jared Dudley could become. And Robert was like, I don't know, because he'd never heard of him. Robert's whole thing is, if he's heard of you, great. If he didn't hear of you, then he's like, I don't know. So Jason Richardson, for us, beyond what we liked about him as a player, his big value was slam dunk champion Jason Richardson. Because you know, if you say that, Robert's like, I'm in, right? Yeah. You tell me I'm getting somebody that I can introduce at a party or a mixer, well, Robert's
this is the Dan. This is the Dan Fagan thing, RIP, with this whole, yeah, I hear from all these teams, all these GMs, my fucking owner. Wait, can I curse on this? Tom is
Of course.
The Habershow.
This is the lawless place here. Okay, so go ahead.
My fucking owner. That's your job, buddy. Your job is to corral your owner. Your job is to manipulate your owner. I'm over here manipulating my player. You think you could maybe manipulate your owner and maybe we can get something done? That's the dynamic. It's how do you cajole this irascible billionaire into doing what you want to do?
And Ethan, to that point, that's why from the very beginning, I was like, this hinky thing ain't going to work. I don't care how good it looks on paper. It ain't going to work unless you're just the most charismatic son of a bitch ever. In the words of Jules from Pulp Fiction, you got to be 10 times more charismatic than that motherfucker from Green Acres, right? Like, you got to be one charming motherfucking pig. Basically, you got to be charming as fuck to convince your ownership that this very long-term play is worth all the angst. And the GMs that you see that never get fired, and you're like, how does he keep his job this long? Because he's really, really good at corralling his owner.
Yeah.
Ernie Grunfelds of the world.
Well,
I didn't want to say Ernie's name.
Well, Amin did call that, and it is one thing to say we're going to do something, but those private equity guys, those guys involved in the ownership group, I don't think they were ever involved in anything as public as this, and they didn't know what it was like to have failure hung around your neck.
No,
that's feeling. It's
Ethan. Rude. That was the thing. Henry kept telling me, no, they're and Henry and Pablo, two very smart guys, very well-connected guys, but they kept trying to convince me, no, these guys are math guys because they're hedge fund guys or whatever. They'll understand. I said, there ain't no hedge fund in the world where they make fun of your kids at school for owning the worst team. Like, that's a reality that's not – you're not factoring in into your calculations.
Yeah. Yeah, it's and losing is its own thing too. Just having been around the Warriors before they took off, I almost just went and did something else. I was curious about the NBA. I kind of fell into it. Like Amin, I didn't have a plan that I charted out. It just was all very happenstance. I was just I thought I was going to do political journalism or write articles about stuff that wasn't sports, and this was a hobby that turned into something else. But just hanging around Oracle and that stink of failure game after game, and it just soaks into everybody's pores, and it just losing is a real thing, and it filters down from the players to everybody else, and it is powerful. And I don't think that the people who took over the Sixers necessarily respected the power of it.
Well, I remember sitting in an ESPN meeting
preseason meeting, and Brian Windhorst pitched this story at the summit. And he just raised his hand. He's like, yeah, I think a story idea might be everyone's miserable in the NBA. Like, everyone's richer, and yet everything is terrible. It evokes kind of the Louis C.K. bit about flying in the air, and everyone's mad about the Wi-Fi not working. He's like, you're sitting in a chair in the sky. Well, who cares if the Wi-Fi doesn't work?
It was I like Stephen Silas quoted what I remember Paul Silas saying, and something that Brian likes to quote, which is, NBA ain't no bowl of roses. And it's a quote I return to often, but you were saying.
That's nice.
Yeah.
And by the way, the Louis C.K. bit is beyond the chair in the sky. It's, oh, you mean the shit that you just fucking discovered 10 minutes ago? Because it's, the whole thing is, it's the first flight ever with Wi-Fi. And then when they get in the air, the Wi-Fi doesn't work. And the guy says, oh, this is bullshit. Like, oh, I'm sorry. The thing you just discovered 10 minutes ago? You're sitting in a chair flying through the air.
And like and you see all these Supermax guys get traded, and it just is kind of this bowl of wilted roses where these superstars should be happy. They're making $50 million a year, and yet their teams and the players can't wait to get out from their marriages, right? Well, and as someone who just got laid off in a pandemic, I gotta say, you know, having family has been so key to like my happiness, because I come home from work. Oh, that's mean. I don't have a job right now, I guess I'd say. Coming home from my office and seeing the kids, it brings this like kind, just a total different world. So we have this Twitter world where we're sitting at home or at the office and flipping, like doom scrolling about the pandemic or about how this superstar is unhappy and trying to get a trade. And then I see my kids and they're like, Dada! And I'm like, oh, this is amazing. And an amazing thing happened yesterday. My mom, who you guys both have done the Pepper Challenge, thank you so much for that. For ALS research, we raised about $1 million all in due to, you know, sending to ALS, TDI, and all the research biotechs trying to find a cure for this horrible disease that my mom happens to have. And I hadn't seen, like, during this pandemic, I've seen my mom maybe one or two times, just a handful of times. And most of it is with a mask on. She's on a ventilator full time. And it's like what you imagine if you're going into a fighter jet, what you put on your face, right? And I hadn't seen my mom smile in 6 months. And yesterday she underwent surgery to get a trach put into her neck to help her breathe. Basically, like, instead of having a mask over your mouth, you have a tube going into your throat to help you breathe better. So you don't have to do it on your own. It helps you just bypass the whole mouth thing. I got to see my mom smile for the first time in 6 months. It was awesome. Like, I can't tell you how cool it was, not just that, but giving the phone to my FaceTiming and showing my daughters, who are 3 and 1, Jima smiling, and their faces just lit up. And it was this really cool thing that, like, man, getting laid off sucked. Pandemic sucks. ALS sucks. But I'm super grateful to have family, and there is good news to be found. You just have to go find it. And I've taken on this thing where it's like, you got to embrace the good news. It, like, during this pandemic and during – I was on a quote-unquote vacation when I found out I was getting laid off. I was with my wife's family, and because the NBA had been delayed, vacation, whatever it used to be, was supposed to be the middle of August, and I was there, and I got a call from my boss, and he was just so apologetic. He's like, look, the pandemic just – it's been really rough on the revenues and everything. We won't be able to make it back. And I had to go back into work and work the rest of the season just with a smile on my face, like, yeah, everything's going great. And it was tough, man. Yeah. But you got to embrace the good news. And the good news yesterday is that the surgery went well. And all you people who did the Pepper Challenge, the Congress just passed an act, new legislature, like, unbelievably bipartisan, overwhelming majority vote to pass an ALS law that would enable just people who have ALS to get access to benefits quicker. And it just, lots of good things are happening. And I don't get to thank you guys in person enough because of the pandemic, but thank you for all you've done. Amin especially. Amin was like the first person to do the ALS Pepper Challenge on air.
He made it go TV viral. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. He was like, Tom, I got you. Don't worry about it. And I was like, what are you going to do? And he's like, don't worry. I got it. And he goes on the set on ESPN live and hands out peppers to – who was it, Amin? It was Rachel. Rachel was the next one.
It was on Sports Nation. Yeah. Rachel was who I called out, and then Rachel did it. I think Rachel was who I called out. Right? Like, because you're supposed to call out someone.
Yeah, I think you did Chuck too, Charles Barkley.
I did Rachel and Charles. Yeah, I think those were my two call outs. But on the set, it was me, Michelle Beadle, and Marcellus Wiley, who basically sat there and heckled me. Oh, and Sean Merriman, because I remember I was drinking Sean Merriman's his water. He's got a branded water. So I was like,
Sean Marion or Sean Merriman?
Sean Merriman, the San master. Diego Charger.
Yeah. The lights out.
Yeah.
Dance.
So yes. That's so thank you for everyone. Lots of good news to be embraced and enjoyed. And but the NBA, we got to talk NBA a little bit, I guess. The NBA is. Today, the big news today was that Giannis Antetokounmpo went to practice and did the media availability and said, I'm not focusing on my contract. I'm just focusing on basketball. And if you're a Milwaukee Buck fan, and that is exactly what you don't want to hear, right?
Yeah. Although, this guy, although they will convince themselves. I mean, fans, hey, I'm not trying to say that we're above fans or whatnot. I'm just talking about a certain fan pathology. If you are listening as a fan, I'm not talking about you necessarily, but they do have a flexibility for whatever they want to be true. And I can see those fans going, well, we want him to focus on basketball. This is exactly what we want him to focus on. This is, you know, none of this media contract business. You know, we want him to win a championship. So this is good. It's not good. I mean, there could be better signs, I should say.
Like, should this be the headline every single day?
I mean, a meme.
Should it or will it? Because, I hope everybody knows every day that thing goes unsigned, it's going to be the headline every day. And then once the 22nd passed, it's going to be the headline in every city. Every Zoom session is going to be, and let's not forget the obligatory Knicks Zoom session where they ask him, could you see yourself playing in New York? And he says, never say never. And I've always loved this city and this building has a lot of meaning and all that. And then the New York press corps scurries back and they write about Giannis open to coming to New York. And then the back page would say something like, Greek freak in Garden of Eden or something, whatever.
And then Stephen A gets excited to just build up the moment when it doesn't happen, and then you can have the rant about
it. New York Knickerbockers, if they can get Giannis Antetokounmpo, a two-time MVP.
Okay, now pivot.
I'm here to tell you.
Now pivot it to when they don't get him and they get some disappointing kind of mediocre player instead. Now pivot to that one. Pivot to that.
So first of all, it has to start with. Now, you guys know that I've been nothing but praiseworthy to the job that Leon Rose and World Wide West and whatever other people they have over there working there, and Scott Perry have done for the New York Knicks. And I thought that they've done everything to put themselves in a position to go after the blue chip prospects like a Giannis Antetokounmpo. And then Jim Dolan's got to do something dumb and da-da-da. Hello, guys.
Brooke Lopez. Molly.
Molly, Max, if I got to watch another possession of Brooke Lopez with $13 million, I'm going to just, I don't know what I'm going to do.
And the best part of that is that they actually signed Robin Lopez, but he says Brooke Lopez.
and then Max will tell, like, Brooke, Robin, doesn't matter. It's just... Oh, it's all set up for it. But I mean, look, with these free agents,
Zaza Pachulia. I've done Danilo Gallinari. In my entire tenure at ESPN, I've only done one show, one segment, excuse me, with Stephen A. Smith. It was SportsCenter, and we were talking about the Warriors, and like I went, and then he went off, and he said Zaza Pachulia, and then Carrie Champion looks at me and says rebuttal, and I'm like, I just want to hear him say Zaza Pachulia one more time, and he said Zaza Pachulia.
Oh,
I was like, yeah, this my night is made.
He's one of those dudes, you know. People say about Tony Kornheiser that Tony Kornheiser is not necessarily who he is on the studio set; that he's more toned down. Stephen A., when he's in the media room, it's awesome. It's gather round, and he's just spitting takes. He's just going with the takes. I mean, last time it was about the Celtics imploding with the Kyrie situation. No, it wasn't the Kyrie situation. It was the Celtics imploding. I mean, that's him. That's him all the time. But we are digressing. Bucks, Giannis, look, I can't predict the future. I don't know what's inside his mind. I'm not a doctor, Amin, but
did you just do a Stephen A. Preamble?
It might have been, but I'm white, so it's more of a Skip Bayless, you know, because they do the same thing. They do the same misdirection.
You got to do the hard exhale. Well,
I didn't want to say this.
No, I thought when the Milwaukee Bucks went out and got Drew Holiday and Bojan Bogdanovic, because he's got to fuck up the name, that they were a sure lock for Giannis to stay, that he couldn't have any complaints. But then one little thing happened and everything changed.
And the Cowboys.
I think about the Bucks, and I'm like the botched Bogdan Bogdanovic trade probably doesn't get enough play. The no supermax sign from
I think it does feel like the pebble Tom. That might have thrown the train off the tracks. It does seem like that. I don't know if that's true.
Or is a pebble?
Might have been an anvil. But I mean,
yeah, I would say it's a little bit bigger than a pebble. But
yeah, but it might have been foretold. Regardless, it seems like here's what I would say. I think it's very understandable that a lot of people, especially on NBA Twitter, and a lot of fans are annoyed at how we wish cast these superstars off their small market teams. It feels like we are part of the drumbeat ushering these guys away, and it's creating too much instability in the league. They want us to talk about today. They want us to talk about the game. They don't want us to talk about free agency.
The numbers don't agree with what you're saying, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Let me do the preamble. But they never put the pressure on these guys, the fans of these teams, to assure them of some stability. And that's what's interesting to me. You know, if Bucks fans, there's so much focus on blaming the media. I mean, Giannis can just end this real quick.
Yep.
He could have ended it a while ago, you know, and that's not happening. And that's why this situation is here. That's why the speculation is what it is.
Let me ask you a question. Who was the last superstar homegrown, right? Not Durant, basically, to leave a good situation, meaning good ownership, good management, good coaching.
Was Paul George?
Where did he leave that was good ownership, good management,
I guess coaching? It wasn't that good in Indiana, but it wasn't like known as bad necessarily.
It wasn't bad, but it wasn't exactly like Milwaukee is, I would say, a very well-run organization.
Yes. Oh, right? Kawhi.
Oh.
Ooh, that is a good one.
That's a good one.
It's different dudes. Who else? Different dude stuff because, happening.
Yeah. Who else?
The Kawhi pull might have been all I had.
LeBron leaving for Cleveland?
I don't think that was good.
Leaving Miami? Leaving Miami.
Oh, leaving Miami. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Not homegrown, though.
That's
true. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It gets me to this next thing, which is, have you looked at the list of Supermax eligibility and what happened after that? Like the CBA puts in the Supermax contract to give teams this lever that they can pull to keep their homegrown stars on the books for forever, right? Here's the list of players who were eligible for a Supermax. You had to win an MVP in any of the previous three seasons. You had to win DPOY in the previous season or both of the two seasons before that. Or you just basically had to make an All-NBA in the previous season. Okay. Steph Curry, John Wall, Russell Westbrook, Damian Lillard, James Harden, Anthony Davis, Kemba Walker, Jimmy Butler, DeMarcus Cousins. Am I missing anybody that were eligible for a Supermax after the implementation of the CBA rule? Steph Curry signed. He's still with the Warriors. John Wall signed, and then he was promptly traded after he had his Achilles. Russell Westbrook signed, then traded twice. Damian Lillard signed.
Oh, hold on. My fault. I was on mute. John Wall wasn't promptly traded, man. Come on.
Well, it felt right that way because we forgot about him until it happened.
Yeah. Right. So Steph Curry, John Wall, Russell Westbrook, Damian Lillard. All right. Damian Lillard and Steph Curry are still with their incumbent teams. Okay. James Harden signed and now is going to nightclubs instead of reporting to camp. Anthony Davis, Kemba Walker, Jimmy Butler, DeMarcus Cousins. So that's nine eligible.
Where was Jimmy eligible for Supermax?
In Chicago.
Was he?
Was he on the trajectory for a Supermax?
Well, regardless, Tom's making the point that something's rotten in the state of Denmark, unless this podcast comes out concurrent with the signing of the, but yeah, it's something. So it's going against type is the point you're making.
Right. The idea of the Supermax is, I don't know if it's backfiring, but it's certainly no lock and key to keep your superstars happy and in your team. So
you know what's a lock and key to keep your superstars happy and in your team? Run it well.
But wouldn't the Bucks say that we did that? And look at this.
The Bucks, and that's why they're an interesting case study, right? Did you name Kawhi on that list, by the way, Tom?
Did he fit the criteria? Was he a
super- he did. He did, but they never offered it. They never offered it.
They kept
saying, oh, we just want him to da-da-da. And he kept saying, well, if he's da-da-da, then slide it over. And then, no, we just want to make sure, okay, all right, slide it over, and I'll show you how sure I am and how sure you should be. And they never slid it over. So
became a game of chicken, yeah.
Yeah, it became a game of chicken. Kawhi never got the offer. But I guess to my point, that's what makes Giannis such an interesting case study, in that I think, obviously, there was a fracture in the relationship that can explain that. Paul George also... technically, there was a kind of fracture in the relationship. Giannis seems to be the first one where it's like, dude, everything's great. I just don't want to be here.
And this is the guy who's the humble, like, doesn't care about the glamour, isn't a guy who grew up in L.A. or New York or whatever, is in Miami and wants to be in those glamour markets. Like, he is the prototype of what you would expect to sign with long-term with a small market team. Right?
I mean, yeah. I don't necessarily view him that way, and that's not necessarily the image of him I have. Right. I don't. That's the image we've constructed for him. Like, we will construct an image of you if we don't know enough about you. I mean, I think the ultimate example of this, and this is to draw no analogy between Giannis and this guy, but it's the most extreme example to me, is Marvin Harrison, where we just constructed a whole image of Marvin Harrison, the football player, in our minds because he didn't talk, and then he had this whole crazy side life that nobody knew anything about. And so I just think with Giannis, I mean, we don't really know what he wants. We don't really know what motivates him. And so I don't want to jump to too many conclusions, but he can be a bit of a diva. You hear those things coming out of there. I don't want to get aggregated, but you hear those rumblings.
Well, you wouldn't get aggregated for me?
I mean... I just don't like. I don't like it. It's a necessary evil. This is where I might sympathize with one Kyrie Irving, the aggregation. But it seems like it gets taken out of context and then it gets reacted to. And we're just trying to be as honest as we can with the listener without having it be a headline. But yeah, I think I don't know Giannis Antetokounmpo, but the situation, the back and forth that was seen in the playoff exit with him and Malika, I think should be a tell that he's not necessarily Mr. Just Humble Superstar, is what I would say.
No, I don't think he's a humble superstar. I think quite the opposite. He's He's a maniac. All the reports.
Yeah, he's putting the crown on his head against LeBron. I mean, these things are good. These things are cool, but
Well, it's more than that also, Ethan. It's also he's like, you know, they lost to Brazil in the World Cup. And after the game, that's a Brazilian coach like, you know, what did you like what was your game plan? He said, I didn't need a game plan. I watched the playoffs. And so when Giannis comes back to the NBA, they play Atlanta. And they're blowing out Atlanta, and he's mercilessly going at Bruno Caboclo, I believe, and gets teed up and dunks on him and all this stuff. And they asked him after the game, like, what the hell was that about? And he said, well, it's because with the Brazil, you know, Brazil, all the trash talk they made, and unfortunately, Barbosa and Varejão aren't in the league anymore, so you're next up, kid. Like, he literally just picked on Caboclo because that was the closest Brazilian he could find, right? So this is a guy who's extremely proud and extremely competitive to a maniacal level. And I've talked to Chris Middleton about it. And Chris Middleton, yeah, the guy's he's a maniac. But to Tom's point, he's also someone who has openly praised the small town life and not really actively sought out kind of flash and glitz and glamour, even when you talk about some of the, you know, the endorsements and the things that he does. The other part of this, though, Ethan, is a theory that you and I have that is rearing its head again, which is the accent cures all ills.
Ah, we find you adorable. He's talking. Oh, yep. Yeah, if a regular American player talks about drinking a smoothie, nobody cares. Nobody cares at all. You talk about it with wonderment in your eyes or the Greek accent. Oh my God, it's incredible. But yeah, I think the accent is rearing its head. And then to call back to earlier in the conversation, you can say that you like all the small town living and you don't need all the glitz and glamour and everything else until you think you're the best player in the league and they're putting your playoff games at 11 a.m. on the West Coast as happened.
You think that's it? Do you think that's it? I don't think that's it.
But I agree with Ethan that there's a certain like place in the game that he hasn't reached yet. Partly because he plays for Milwaukee.
And, you know, American fans just haven't resonated to him in the way you might think. And I don't know. It's always an alchemy. I'm a little more interested in it than most people as to what creates a draw. You know, why this guy, not that guy? Why Zion? Why Zion getting 14 national TV games and maybe even deserving that based on the numbers that Duke would do whenever he would play? Why him, but not necessarily Ja Morant? You know, America doesn't really care too much. I mean, there are answers to these things, but there's no, it's just human. It's alchemy. It's a je ne sais quoi. And you would think Giannis would have it, but he doesn't. And you could say it's about being from another country, but it seems like maybe Luka does have it. And
Luka has something else.
playing for the Mavericks, having a boisterous owner.
Does he? I don't know. I haven't been around Luka to ascertain whether he fits the Euro stereotype of I don't shower. I just think this deodorant will get the job done. No, I mean, like, I think that's part of it.
I said owner, not odor, by the way.
Oh, I thought you said, oh, I'm sorry.
A boisterous odor?
Yeah, I really thought he said boisterous odor.
Doesn't that sound like that's like a second baseman from Latin America? That sounds like a name that you would find in baseball.
Oder. Yeah. Boisterous Oder.
Boisterous Oder.
Now batting second, number 12, boisterous Oder.
What a glove. You know, it's a real snappy throw to first every time.
He bat 389 in AAA, guys.
So Milwaukee is one of my three teams that I'm fading this year.
Ooh, hot take.
So I asked you guys three teams that you're big on, taking the over on the over-under in Vegas. And Milwaukee is at 49.5. They're projected to have the best record in the NBA this season, which translates to 56 wins over 82 games. Milwaukee, okay? And this is from the Superbook, Jeff Sherman, at Golf Odds on Twitter.
Love that guy.
Milwaukee is projected to be the best team in the NBA in the regular season. And for all the reasons we just described, in the chemistry in the locker room and all the WWF shit they did last year and the happy, happy, joy, joy, like – everyone, I think, was expecting that to happen again this year if Giannis had signed on that dotted line. But now everyone's going to be walking on eggshells, I feel like, in Milwaukee. And the whole, hey, we didn't really want to trade you Dante DiVincenzo. Like, all this stuff, it just feels like the chemistry and the we're going to go hard every single night and beat the living crap out of everybody that we saw from last year in the regular season. It's out the window. I don't see that happening. So I'm under on Milwaukee 56 wins.
I love over it, man. Mr. Statman, Mr. Stat in your face is all about the chemistry in this situation.
I think that's what over-unders over an entire season, I'm always looking at like the stuff that you can't quantify or the stuff that isn't already baked into the over-unders. And keep in mind, over-unders is also kind of like not really what Vegas is projecting. It's really just where they want to have 50% of the bets lie. So it's not necessarily a projection. But if I'm going to bet on a team to win the regular season this year, I don't think it's going to be Milwaukee.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, are we getting into it? Are we going with our three fades and whatever the hell the opposite of fades is?
Your three most overrated teams going into this season. Ethan, go ahead.
Maybe I'm an optimist. I found it so much easier to find the antithesis. So I mean, Brooklyn is the one that just screams out to me. I mean, that's the
fucking pick.
Easy.
Yeah. It's like pulsating. So much. You're looking at, they got to get out.
He's going to hear it. Ethan, he's going to hear it. He goes, I heard what you said about the podcast. Nobody like you.
Just be amazing. I mean, I wouldn't put it past the
aggregate it.
To listen to this. Just
trying to sell
me.
Books.
Just haunting me. But 51.8 for the win loss that I see here. That's your adjusted for the 82 game. Yeah. Like, that's how I need to think about it. I can't really think about it.
I didn't know what 45 meant. I was like, what?
Yeah, I can't think. So yeah, it's Brooklyn 45.
Vegas has them as basically a 52 win team in normal circumstances, and you're taking the under. Me too. I would take the hard under.
I don't. The Achilles is a devastating injury. I hope the man Amin was referencing recovers from it fully, but it's really devastating, and I don't think people properly appreciate it. They think we're living in some new age where it's just fixed, and no, that thing is just all the way down on the base level of the kinetic chain. And I don't know, because we can only know so much. I don't know where that tear occurred. So there's a lot of devil in those details. If it's down by the heel or higher up, that's potentially, you're just never going to be the same guy. I don't know if that's the case, but not knowing is one of the reasons why I sink below that 51.8 projection. And you're already getting this weirdness with Kyrie out the gate where he doesn't – I mean, that doesn't seem like a positive situation that he's walking into. That doesn't seem like I'm expecting to get a bunch of great coverage when he's not wanting to talk to the media. So, yeah, that's just too high for me. It just seems like they have a lot of disaster potential, even if I wouldn't be shocked if the talent wins out there. So that's the one that's
– And I think Amin is going to take the over on the Nets simply because they have a bunch of Phoenix folks that he worked with. Mike D'Antoni, the associate head coach for Steve Nash. And you have the Amin factor where whatever Ethan is going for or whoever is Ethan's enemy is now – Amin's friend. So Kevin Durant factor. I think Amin's going to go for Brooklyn simply because the Phoenix Suns ties, and also the enemy of Ethan Strauss is my friend.
Okay. Well,
you know, I didn't want to. I was actually going to go under, but I look at it. 52 wins.
Yeah.
I mean, I think sometimes we underestimate what just pure talent does, right?
The Lakers.
like to me, I look at Brooklyn and I see a million different issues. But at the end of the day, you're going to win a bunch of games. Same thing happened to me in a way last year with Houston. My expectations for Houston with Russell Westbrook and James Harden were super low because I just thought, you can't. You cannot. It won't work. But like, I underestimated, in terms of a regular season thing, just how many games you're just going to win because you're better. You're going to beat up on teams just because you're better. And that's ultimately, when you talk about a 50-win season, it's built mainly on beating up the people you should beat up that have no business being in the gym with you. No matter how much of a, you know, of a headache Kyrie is, like, at the end of the day, they're going to destroy, like, Cleveland four times and the Knicks four times and, you know, Detroit four times. Like, this is going to happen.
If Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant, I mean, that's the big if.
Even if Kevin Durant's not Kevin Durant.
I don't know.
All right. Well, I mean, who else do you have?
I would go with, this one, definitely Denver. My bold prediction on SiriusXM was that Denver is going to be in the play-in tournament.
Wow. So you think fraud conference finalist?
You think Jamal Murray was a mirage?
Well, okay. So maybe a little bit of that, right? But more so, this is a team that lost every single good defensive player they've had over the last 2 years.
I like it.
Malik Beasley, Torrey Craig, Jeremy Grant, and Mason Plumlee is no one's confusing with Mutombo, but still a good defensive player. And so now you look at the possible starting lineups for Denver. Jamal Murray starting, not a good defensive player. Nikola Jokic is starting, not a good defensive player. And then your remaining three slots, is it Michael Porter Jr., we believe, is going to be one of those? Mm-hmm. Not a good defensive player. So now, Gary Harris, but Will Barton started every game last year. So is it Will Barton? And if he is, not a good defensive player. Jamichael Green was a nice pickup, but, you know, is he going to start for them? Paul Millsap, 100 years old.
Right.
Isaiah Hartenstein, relatively unproven.
100 years old, coming off a split second of an offseason. Which I think is another factor. No, I like the call. And it sucks because I love that Nuggets team, and I think the NBA needs more of that organic ground up, watch the team grow together. NBA needs more of that. And so watching their offseason was a disappointment. But I think when you're looking at these things and trying to gamble, defense, always underrated, always the market inefficiency. And I think Amin is on point with fading the Nuggets.
The swing factor there would be Bol Bol.
Yeah, he could be.
I'm not saying he is going to turn the tide.
He's got
them,
an opportunity.
Yeah, he's going to get minutes, and he can be the defensive force that they need on the back line and just be the wild card.
You guys want another under, by the way?
Yes.
How about this one? I'm torn between – I got one that's considered good, and I don't think it's going to be that good. And I got one that's considered bad that I think is actually going to be worse. Which one do you want?
Bad to worse, because this is a dynamic I want to talk about. Because we've got Cade Cunningham looming and others.
Okay. Chicago and Minnesota. Walk out of here. You guys are not winning no 29 games.
Okay. My Minnesota defense would be this, because I think, again, it's defense. That's the market inefficiency. Minnesota's defensive ability, awful. But they are incentivized to win versus a lot of these other situations where these teams are incentivized to stink, because Minnesota's pick, top three protected. Basically, they should be trying to win. And some of these other teams are going to, I mean, especially in this season where you don't have gate revenue to worry about, probably. I mean, why the hell not? If you don't have some sort of looming TV contract you're trying to sign, who cares? Just tank away.
Ethan, strategy question. If you're the Warriors, do you trade that Minnesota pick before the lottery?
Before the lottery. I mean, I don't know. It might have its most allure. I mean, I was thinking it might have its biggest allure like now or right before now.
The biggest potential allure is if they end up being the four pick. That's the biggest potential.
I want to know if the Warriors season runs aground. Hollinger projected the Warriors to be 11th in the West. Now, if they have that kind of season, I mean, that's a much different dynamic to me. Like, I need to know how bad the Warriors are when I'm considering making such a trade.
I noticed you didn't put them in your under, Ethan.
I like a lot of what I'm hearing out of there. I didn't like what I was hearing last season. I think I wrote that there was a strong possibility they'd miss the playoffs, and a lot of loyal fans were not happy about it. But that's because we were talking to Steve Kerr. You know, those are tea leaves to read. He was saying pump the brakes. He was reeling. A lot of other people around the team were reeling from what they lost defensively. Again, defense, the market inefficiency. And while it is a devastating blow for them to lose Clay, I think that they have done a pretty good job stocking the roster with athletic defensive players. Now, the swing factor for them is if Steph gets hurt, it's just there's no offense. Like, I don't know how they're going to score. They've always had an issue scoring when he's on the bench. But if you think he's going to be healthy enough after all of this rest in this offseason, It's an intriguing roster with I think they're going to swarm teams. I think they're going to play really fast in transition. And I'm just kind of reading the local vibes of how the coaches and the people around the situation are talking about it. And that even though the Warriors are probably overrated most years because they are a public team, that scares me off putting them in the fade category.
I've got Houston, Brooklyn, Milwaukee. Houston, I saw it in a couple places that in a couple of my buddies who live in D.C., they're like, why would we trade John Wall, who's 2 years younger than Russell Westbrook, and have to give up a pick to get that to happen? And I was like, John Wall might be 30 years old, but in like effective age, like I don't think we do this enough where we have guys coming off of a huge injury. Yeah. Like, I don't think he's 30 years anymore. Like effectively, I think John Wall is probably like 34 or 35. Mm. At the tail end of his career because of that injury.
What's Kevon Looney's effective age?
Oh, man.
By the way, I'm predicting a Kevon Looney renaissance. That's another part of the reason I'm not fading. But yeah.
I'm taking Houston under for all the reasons we already talked about with James Harden and trading him now. And Christian Wood, I talked about it on Basket Buds over the weekend for the Monday show on The Athletic. Is the Christian Wood factor? So many things have to go right for him to be in a happy situation where he's going to outperform his expectations again. I think he's Hassan Whiteside 2.0. As soon as he gets paid, the whole equation changes. And Christian Wood getting his money after seven teams saw how talented he is and passed, including one in Detroit that had every incentive to re-sign their homegrown player development star, and they passed.
That is definitely a smoking gun.
Yeah.
That is when that happens, like you got it. It's, by the way, it's one of the reasons why people say, oh, you know, Harden might go to Philadelphia because Daryl's there. And I said, of any of the trade partners rumored connected with Houston, the only guy who knows unequivocally what he has and what he's giving up and what he could have is Daryl. He's the only one who's been around both sides. And so it should be telling you Philadelphia is not aggressive in its pursuit of James Harden.
By the way, Detroit maybe over at 26.8 adjusted.
Ooh, are you banging the over?
Yeah, I don't think they're that. When I look at some of these other teams, I don't know if they're that bad. I mean, they've got some veterans. They've got some rotation players. I don't think that they're the Knicks. I mean, the Knicks are a little bit less. I mean, the Knicks are projected for one fewer game. Like, I don't think the Pistons are the Knicks is what I'm saying. Plus, I like Killian Hayes. I know rookies don't add wins, but maybe that's a Killian Hayes pick.
My three up. Wait, I mean, did I get your three down, all three? So you had Brooklyn?
I flip-flopped on Brooklyn. I have Minnesota, I have Chicago, and then Indiana was my third.
Yeah.
Eastern Conference playoff slate of an over, by the way. I've got Heat, Raptors, Celtics.
Those are none of the three that I have for my three ups. That's interesting. I have Philly, Charlotte, and Golden State. And I know I'm a homer on the Charlotte thing. But people are getting upset about the Gordon Hayward contract and not looking at the Gordon Hayward, the player.
Yeah, he's good.
And I feel like he is a really good player, maybe not all NBA, but he's kind of the prototype of what you want in the NBA.
It's funny.
Just a little bit of everything.
Yeah. I think he's good for the – it's funny. I think he's good for the Hornets, and I also think that there's such a traffic jam on the wings, on the perimeter, and Boston that I don't think it's the worst thing in the world for them and their young players, their budding stars, to grow without him. So in a weird way, I think it's maybe I don't know if it's addition by subtraction, but I just don't think it's the worst thing in the world for the Celtics to not have him there, even though the circumstances are suboptimal as to how they lost him, as John Hollinger was writing about. But yeah, I like those Eastern Conference teams. I think that they're all well coached. I want, in this chaotic situation, I want a proven sharp coach. That's part of my thinking here. A lot of you got to think on the fly. I mean, I just think about, look, I know nothing about Steven Silas and how good a coach he is, but I don't want to start off in this situation with the ground shifting underneath my feet all the time. I favor those coaches who are proven and have a lot of capital to do whatever they need to do to get wins right now.
Golden State, I just feel like people are underrating the Steph factor. Like you said, if he's healthy, I mean, bang the over.
But in the one game he had with Wiggins, if you watch that game again, and Wiggins didn't have a great statistical game, but it was just open shot, open shot, open shot, because he's still that guy where he runs one way and three guys run with him. And it is forgotten about. It is unique. You know, it's not something Damian Lillard does. We were making those comparisons, as great as Lillard is. But yeah, I think people are underrating that factor.
In Philly, I'm hitting the over on a 51 win team. People forget in 2018, Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid's on court offensive rating playing together 113 points per 100 possessions. One of the best in the NBA. Their net rating on the court was plus 16. Last 2 years ago, it was plus 7. Last year, it was 1. Not the trend that you want to see with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, but I think that has more to do with personnel. And I think Daryl Morey understood you need shooting, and more shooting. Getting Seth Curry, maybe one of the, five best shooters of all time on your team surrounding Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. I mean, you're going to see so much more fluidity to that offense and so much more gravity to the perimeter than what we saw last year. So I'm going banging the over on Philly, Charlotte, Golden State. Amin, what do you have?
Ooh, the overs. This is how Amin filibusters while he pulls up the chart again.
I thought Dr. Doom was going to throw more cold water on the optimism like he did in the Phoenix Suns front office and some of the ideas. I'll tell you what, not to digress too much.
Give Amin a breather here.
When I'm looking at this and I'm looking at how they did the national TV schedule, I'm thinking, so basically you've got, 16 games for the Lakers, 14 for the Warriors, 14 for the Pelicans, and neither are projected to win most of their games. That could get pretty ugly if these projections are to be believed, is what I'm saying. I mean, that's interesting, I would say. It's interesting if two out of your three or four top teams for this very lopsided TV schedule are not winning, that could be a bit of an issue. The Pelicans one, I need explanations on. I'm writing about
it. I would go Washington over.
Yes.
I think, again, like the whole, we've gotten so used to bashing Russ that we've forgotten kind of what makes him really fucking good. And in a situation where you put him on the floor with a bunch of shooters,
yes,
and spread the court, they're going to be good. And they, by the way, they've needed someone like that. You know, like, he's much better than John Wall. 100% John Wall. He's much better than that. And so whatever healthy John Wall has provided for the Wizards, first of all, this roster is more balanced in terms of bringing more shooting out there. And second of all, Russ is better.
Mm-hmm.
And so, to me, I think they're actually going to do very well this year. Another over.
We got one from Amin.
Oh, here's the second one. And this one, I'm kind of surprised. Portland? Portland that low?
Portland really? Portland always hits the over. I mean, Neil O'Shea always will talk about it.
Always.
Neil O'Shea.
Always hits the over.
I can hear Neil O'Shea's voice in my head right now. Just, that's what you guys don't get. That's what you stat guys don't understand. That's what you don't get.
Name drop.
Wait, but like, I feel like stat guys are number one in like loving Terry Stotts and Damian Lillard. Like, I feel like that's just, I mean, I don't know why the analytics guys became the target of that.
There was a specific name he was naming, and I think I subbed it in for that particular. There is a guy that we are friends with whose job it is to grade trades immediately after they happen, which is a very difficult job that he does.
I can't believe
well.
You called Zach Harper out like that.
But it makes general managers absolutely hate him.
Really?
For his trouble.
Really?
Yeah, because again, like this goes, think about it. My fucking owner. Think about it. The owner doesn't know shit. He doesn't know anything. What's he going to do? He's going to go to a certain four-letter website that's known for having the biggest and best sports content.
OANN? And,
of course. And he's going to click on it. He's going to click on it, and the grade is a D, you know? And then from the GM perspective, it's, well, the person giving the grade doesn't know what move this sets up or why I had to do it to appease this guy or that guy. And now my owner's calling me saying, what the fuck? You just made a D plus grade. So that's that dynamic.
I love the Portland pick. I mean the Robert Covington, even though he's not a five, he's going to help their rim protection. I think they vastly improve their defense. And I think we don't talk enough about the addition by subtraction. I know Hassan Whiteside, I've already said enough about him on this, but I think the Miami Heat's improvement last year wasn't just about Jimmy Butler. It was about all of the energy in that locker room and all of the coaching and hand-holding on offensively. Like, they didn't have to deal with that anymore. They could just focus on high basketball IQ players. And I think Portland, by upgrading their defense and not having guys who look good on paper defensively, like Hassan Whiteside and Christian Wood are like my all scissors team. He's like, what beats paper? The guys who are on paper, good players, they fill up the box scores, they get a lot of block shots. Scissors beats paper, right? I think Christian Wood and Hassan Whiteside are on there. What's that?
It's a very complicated analogy.
And it was hard for us not to make any jokes about all scissors teams that would have been. But yeah.
Sorry.
Oh my gosh.
So Portland, I think.
Who wants to get canceled right now?
Oh, man.
Woo!
What beats paper?
Rock. Shout out to Mickey from Seinfeld. Rock beats paper. What beats rock? Nothing beats rock.
It is true. It's the idea of what? Is paper envelops rock, that the rock is defeated? I don't buy it. Sounds like a lie.
To Portland, I like. And then who else you have on your over?
I mean, I gave my overs.
You had Washington, Portland.
I gave my overs. But
yeah, that's your cue to shut the fuck up and let me get mine.
Yeah,
man.
But you've been filibustering the whole time. How am I supposed to know?
Well, I was filibustering because I wanted to pull up the chart, not because I didn't know, like, I had to go do homework and shit. Like, I know who the ones are. I just got to see what the win totals are. Number three is San Antonio. San Antonio being at 29.5, which is an equivalent to 33 win season. Maybe people forget, like, how good San Antonio is.
I got a counter.
When they're healthy.
Got a counter. I've got a counter. Does this not feel like it is the time for it to happen again? For the Spurs to do a tank job, to replenish and revitalize,
a grand theory here from Ethan that this entire season is going to be about the next draft.
This is the tanking season. This is it, because look, the NBA did well to adjust how lottery odds go. They did well. You know, it's, you can't guarantee yourself a number one pick. You can't throw your hat into the ring in the way that you could. But this is a whole different kind of draft. This is the kind of draft where people feel like if you're in the top 10, that's like 10 number one picks. I mean, that's how they feel right now. Maybe really? The dust will settle a little bit. But I've been watching some of these players, and I haven't even seen the G League guys. And there are a few of them. And, you know, a couple who might contend for that sort of top four pick status. And they're impressive. It's not like last year. And so now it's a situation where if I stink, I guarantee myself top five, and top five in this draft is theoretically way better than number one pick in 2020.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Considering who the number one pick was, the guy who said, you know what, I don't even know if I like basketball.
And he didn't even have good stats. Didn't have good stats. Didn't really like basketball.
The nerve of this motherfucker.
Oh, man, he negged the league. He really did. I mean, he was saying everything to try to not get drafted. And it was hard to get that he played perfectly, apparently. But yeah, so this is, and then you combine how you're not getting hurt at the gate. As I said before, this is just tanky conditions right now. Very tanky.
So you have Sam Austin, tanky? Ethan.
So I had
Miami,
Toronto, Boston.
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe I'm a little intrigued by the Detroit one. I think that one might be a little too low, but yeah.
The thing though I worry about Miami is just overinflated expectations coming into the season. And they're probably Absolutely. Just banged up coming in just like tired and that they're just going to coast until
they're young.
The playoffs.
They're young.
No. The combination of a long season, a season that ended fairly recently, and then like people who, let's call it what it is, overachieved, not being able to do the same thing. And I'm looking specifically at Kendrick Nunn and Tyler Hero.
You think Tyler Hero's just living out on his he's resting on his laurels down there, you know, that he's a big shot?
It's not even resting on his laurels. It's about being on tape, right? Like the league now knows that the tape is out on Tyler Hero. And so unless he's had a massive leap in the 70 days since the end of the season, remember, it's not a regular off season where you say, oh yeah, he went back and he added this and he added that. 70 days, man. Like how much of that was actually even spent working on your game versus just healing up? Because those guys, everyone's hurt. That's what people don't understand. Like at the end of the season, everybody's dealing with an injury. They just don't report it, but everyone's dealing with, no one's like, oh, I feel great. I feel refreshed. Mm. So the idea that in 70 days, this kid has turned around and healed up and then added more shit to his game, probably not likely. He's probably going to be closer to what we saw in the bubble, but the difference is now everybody knows and the game plan for it. And so that to me is going to be something to watch for. Kendrick Nunn may not even be in the rotation anymore with the addition of Avery Bradley. Jimmy Butler, we saw how exhausted he was. Like he gave every last bit of himself. You know, to keep that team competitive in those finals. I think it's natural for them to not have a great start. Or rather, actually, you know what I think is going to happen? I think they'll start fine, and then they're going to hit a wall in the middle of the season because while everyone else is riding off of huge reservoirs of energy, they're spent. They're tapped.
Well, what if I push back and I say Bam's a star? And yes, will continue to flourish.
Yep.
Sure, but is it not enough to push that win total to where they have it?
It's 51 wins equivalent.
It's 51 equivalent? Man, maybe I don't like that one. Maybe I swap.
And by the way, a franchise that knows, you know, wherever you seat us, it doesn't matter. Because, again, home court doesn't matter. So they just went to the finals as a 5 seed. They beat the 1 seed. They beat the 3 seed, right? Are you telling me like, oh, man, we're the Miami Heat. We really, really need to have home court advantage where there are no fans.
And I just thought of something else.
What's that?
Do you think in a COVID era there's going to be the South Beach flu anymore?
There's always going to be a South Beach flu, my friend.
It's just going to be the literal coronavirus is what it's going to be.
Yes. Yeah, that's the difference. You're going to actually get...
Oh, no.
God, what do I replace them with?
Oh, man.
What do I replace the Heat with? Yeah, 50.7. Yeah, that might be a little ambitious of a pick. I'll replace them with Portland. They always nail the over.
Okay.
Every time.
Except for last year.
They didn't last year. Well, never mind.
But again, like the other thing is...
Last year was a fluke season.
Their numbers deflated. Their number is deflated because Nurkic was hurt for most of it. Zach Collins was hurt for most of it. Rodney Hood was hurt for all of it, right? Now you say we come back with Dame and CJ. We're both hurt at different times during the year. Dame and CJ are healthy. Rodney Hood is back. Carmelo, who was relied on, now gets to be a little bit less relied on, can focus more on just being Melo, right? You added Derrick Jones Jr. You added Covington. Nurkic is healthy. Zach Collins is healthy. You don't forget about Simons. Nas Little is coming around the corner. Like, they got themselves a fucking squad now. Mm-hmm. And so to me, to look at their over-under, I'm like, did y'all not know why they were as bad as they were last year? You know, Kevin Durant once infamously said to CJ McCollum, but y'all played like an 8 seed mm-hmm. when they were a 3 seed. Last year, they were a 3 seed. They were an 8 seed who really were like a 3 seed. And that's where I think they'll be this year, a 3 seed.
That was KD at his best when he said, don't worry about
what happens at the top.
At the top of things.
Great quote.
I feel like we got to acknowledge that you're trying to get aggregated by KD on the positive side now.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You're buttering him up now.
I mean, I don't know. It's a crazy world, man. It's a crazy world. What if I put in an interview request and he wanted to do it? You don't know. It could happen. Mm. Could occur.
Yeah, so I agree with CJ. I think there was a projection that had the Blazers out of the playoffs. I love their offseason. Love it. And Dame, all about the right things. And he's talking about shooting from half court. Logo Lillard. Love Portland this year.
Tom and Amin.
Fellas, three up, three down. Thank you. Thank you for coming on and being a part of this. And yeah. Thank you for trying to get it aggregated, Ethan.
I mean, I could have worked harder, if we're honest. I could have used some more names, specific quotes.
The season's starting scandal. In 2 days. The preseason, it's crazy. It's crazy.
I can talk about what somebody in Steph's camp told me about Giannis. I could say a lot of things. They could say a lot of things. Just kidding. Maybe. Maybe. Possibly. It's the Raptor. He's going to the Raptor. I'm just joking about that one. I'm just kidding about that one.
Is that why you bang the over on Toronto? Is because you just got a little Giannis factor that he's going to get traded there?
I would like to do a podcast where at the beginning we say that we are lying and then see if, you know, or maybe at the end say it and see if somebody rushes to the aggregation machine.
You can't do that shit at the end, man. That'd be fucking corny. But if you did it at the beginning, that would be good. I mean, we've done that before. Remember we did the Radio Ethan one and someone fucking aggregated and said like Ethan Strauss of da da da. Like,
it annoys me. I'm okay with it on the podcast. I feel more like I own it. I don't like when you're on radio and they blast it out. For some reason, the radio one feels a little like dirty pool. But anyway, you were trying to gracefully outro us, Tom. I enjoyed myself on your podcast.
Thank you. I just saw a Ben McMahon reporting that Stephen Silas and James Harden did not have any communication during the holdout. They had a brief interaction Wednesday, according to Silas. Quote, I said hello to him. End quote. Fade the Rockets. And we're out. Thank you, Amin. Thank you, Ethan. Appreciate it.
Oh.
Stop. By the way. Of course, he won't edit it out, and I'll forget, and then everyone will hear me Googling the Nuggets roster because it's just easier for me to look it up than to try to be a smart guy and try and pull off the top of my head, but you know.